The refrigerator stopped humming. The AC wasn't running. It's like the house had stopped breathing. We don't realize how much ambient sound surrounds us every day until it's gone. And even as I was preparing this talk, I didn't have any music, I didn't have any television or people talking or even cars going by. Working in relative silence, I could still hear the air conditioner, the refrigerator, the dehumidifier, the spinning disk in the external hard drive working to save some files on my computer, and the wind chimes on our porch. There's always some level of noise that we have little control over, even when we try to sit and work in silence. And I don't know if this is true for you, but I've often craved complete silence. And I'm lucky in that I tend to have as much quiet as I want working alone from home. But sometimes I want even more profound quiet. A few years ago, I learned about floating. I'm wondering, has anybody here done floating before? Okay. It's basically you're in a tank of water that has a ton of Epsom salt. Is it Epsom salt? That keeps you afloat, like you're on the ocean. And you can choose to do it. I've done it twice, and once I did it in an open air sort of pool. You know, of course, it was private, but in an open air sort of pool. But the first time I tried it, I did it in a sensory deprivation tank because I really wanted like that experience. They had said it's like floating in space. And the way they described it, I was like, yes, this sounds like bliss. And it might have been, except I'm one of those really rare, freaky people that got kind of seasick. And I couldn't handle it, and I was super disappointed. So if I hadn't had that experience, I might have felt some of that bliss. But fortunately, there are other ways to get complete silence. And did you know that there's a room called an anechoic chamber? Has anybody heard of this idea? Anechoic means echo-free, and it's so quiet, it's measured in negative decibels. So to give you an idea of how quiet it is, think of your bedroom at night and the quiet that you experience there. They say that's about 30 decibels. And actually, this morning, I have a decibel app on my phone, and I took it out before, you know, started moving around, and it was about 19. And then my cat joined me, and it went up to about 22. So, you know, if you think of about between 20 and 30 decibels, this anechoic chamber measures negative 9 decibels. The quietest chamber in the world is on the Microsoft campus in Washington State, and the second quietest is in Minneapolis. And you can buy time to go into that Minneapolis chamber and see sort of how long you last. I'm curious if anybody, now think about negative 9 decibels. How long do you think someone would last in that chamber before they would say, get me out of here? Any guesses?
10 seconds.
10 seconds. Yeah. For the average extrovert. Under 10 seconds. 20 minutes is about how long somebody can last. And they really won't let somebody stay in there that much longer. I think they said some of the scientists can do it for maybe 40. And they use these chambers to test sounds on switches and monitors and other things that are supposed to be quiet. That's one reason Microsoft has it. But they lasted about 20 minutes before they were desperate to get out of there. And that's because they were starting to hear their own bodies. Like, we can usually hear our breathing, but they could really hear the breathing. They could hear their heartbeat. They could hear their digestion. They could hear the blood moving through their veins. And if you think your self-talk is loud in a normal environment, think about how loud it would be if you were in one of these anechoic chambers. So as much as we might say that complete silence would be bliss, I think it would kind of make us a little crazy if we did it for too long. And that's just as well because a certain amount of noise is just part of life, whether we live in the country or an urban environment where we have planes, trains, automobiles, providing that constant hum on top of the natural and human-made sounds that are impossible to get away from. There's another type of human-made sound that came up several times in last week's talkback, and that's the noise in our heads. Even if we were able to hit a mute button on the external world and experience complete external silence, we could never escape our internal chatterbox. And the truth is, despite all of the, you know, things that tell us about like how to quiet your mind, how to silence your mind, we don't want to, because There's a difference between chatter and productive self-talk and productive processing. Our internal self-talk can be an ally. It's part of our identity. It's how we process information and our emotions. It's how we work through problems and tap into our creativity. So rather than trying to silence our minds or even trying to bring high levels of silence to our surroundings, my suggestion is that we focus on stilling ourselves. That for me is a much more realistic and productive practice than trying to make my mind a blank slate. I prefer to think about creating space and stillness so that the chatter can settle down, so the mud can settle, and the water can become clear. At that point, I've created just enough silence to hear myself think. Not to get rid of my thoughts completely, but to at least get rid of the mental clutter. Often we think that our capacity to be still and silent is connected to our ability to have solitude. And I do think there's a connection, since the more people or activity that we have around us, the more likely that stillness is going to be interrupted. And we want to get enough solitude, silence, and stillness to hear and feel what really matters. We need to peel back the layers of noise and mud to get to the still waters. About 10 years ago, I encountered this really awesome speech by an essayist and critic named William Dorosiewicz. And he gave this to some cadets at West Point in 2009, and the talk was titled Solitude and Leadership. He said, "I find for myself that my first thought is never my best thought. My first thought is always someone else's. It's always what I've heard about the subject, always the conventional wisdom. It's only by concentrating, sticking to the question, being patient, letting all parts of my mind come into play that I arrive at an original idea. By giving my brain a chance to make associations, draw connections, and take me by surprise. And often that idea doesn't turn out to be very good. I need time to think about that too, to make mistakes and to recognize them, to make false starts and correct them, to outlast my impulses, to defeat my desire to declare the job done and move on to the next thing." I've quoted this paragraph probably countless times over the past 10 years when I've given talks about introversion, because it seems to affirm the typical introvert's desire to think deeply about an issue or a question and to do so alone. I also love it from a coaching perspective. It advocates for being patient, for giving ourselves space and grace to cut through the noise and go beyond the first thought that pops into our heads. By slowing down and being still, we can turn down the volume on our chatter, which often is, as Dorosiewicz says, the conventional wisdom or what someone else thinks. And once we've done that, there's space to turn up the volume on our own wisdom and to hear more clearly what we're telling ourselves, and almost as importantly, to discern where it's coming from. To ask yourself, is that my voice that's speaking, or is that the voice of my parents, a sibling, a priest or a pastor, a teacher, a best friend, your partner, your boss or a coworker, past or present? We carry those with us for a long time. I don't know about you, but I have little self-talk that probably dates back to 5 or 6 years old. Just hangs out there. And if you want to calm your monkey mind and move yourself to more productive reflection, ask yourself in those moments, whose voice is that? Or where did that idea come from? Now, I'm not saying those thoughts or ideas are automatically wrong and to be dismissed, or that they automatically belong to someone else. It's just that we don't often sit with them long enough to question them and decide if they deserve to take up priceless real estate in our heads. What's challenging is to sit with those thoughts long enough to know where they come from and then decide what we want to do with them. Do we agree with them or disagree? Do they reflect who we are and what we believe? Or are they moving us forward or holding us back? One way I'd like to visualize this process of sitting with thoughts long enough for something new to surface is by imagining a phenomenon that happens with many freshwater lakes a few times a year called lake turnover. And I was just talking with Joyce about this before we started for a moment. Without getting into the details, it's a process that happens when the surface water reaches a certain temperature, and that's 39.2 degrees Fahrenheit, and it becomes denser and heavier than the water that's underneath it. That heavier top layer sinks, and it displaces the water below. This results in new water coming to the surface, and that's what we call turnover. And my husband and I have experienced it many times in our years on Grand Traverse Bay and Lake Michigan, and I'm sure you have too. And there's something profound about recognizing how naturally the lake renews itself. And in this renewal, I see a parallel to how we might relate to noise and silence. It feels like giving our minds space for silence can facilitate lake turnover energy. Heavy noise can sink, and new waters, new thinking can come to the surface. And those waters are ready to face the sun and be transformed. And this is where silence and stillness get tricky. And Kent alluded to this last week. Because the fact is, the water that comes to the surface is cold. If you've ever gone to the lake after there's been this turnover, you'll find you dip your toe in and you're like, whoa, what happened? It was really warm yesterday and now it's shockingly cold. Describing it as facing the sun and transformation sounds very warm and fuzzy, but it's actually just a positive reframing of something more challenging and maybe even shockingly cold, change and uncertainty. That's the scary part of silence. When the chatter dies down and we're left with our own thoughts, what if those thoughts tell us something that we don't want to hear? There's a good chance that could happen, because those deeper thoughts are likely to be the ones that are coming from our intuition, from our gut, and if we're lucky, like from our core and our soul. And those thoughts often are the ones that are willing to tell us the truth. There's an idea that Bob Woodward shares that he learned from the CIA and that he uses when he's conducting interviews. Let silence suck out the truth. If you ever watch a crime procedural and you watch the detectives interrogating a witness, the good ones will use silence to keep them talking. It's because there's this discomfort that we get when there's too much silence in a conversation, and our anxiety causes us to want to fill that gap. And what comes out in that gap is usually at least a few shades more authentic and honest than what came before it. That's one reason why silence is so scary, in addition to the reminder that we're all going to die. Still thinking about that one. It's a place where our vulnerability and our truth come out. And when we experience silence in a conversation with ourselves, when we leave that space, there's that same risk of vulnerability, the same possibility that a truth that had been buried beneath the chatter will come out and ask something of us. And that something will involve change and uncertainty. But rather than experiencing it as scary, I believe we can see it as sacred. I'm using the word sacred to mean something that is regarded with great respect or reverence. Our truth is sacred. It deserves to be a part of us that is treated with great respect and reverence. We talked last week about being in relationship with silence, and if at least I think of silence as a gateway to the sacred, and that's a common theme in the world's religions and spiritual and personal growth practices, then that makes the relationship to silence that we have even more important to pay attention to. It's the difference between being passive to silence and being active and engaged with it. To me, to be in relationship with something, and in this case silence, means that I'm intentional about taking time for it, nurturing it, appreciating it, and learning from it. For instance, when the power went out on Monday and I was suddenly surrounded by silence, after I moved through my confusion about why the power had suddenly gone out on a sunny Monday morning, I took a minute or two to be in relationship with it. I closed my eyes and I felt the emptiness. I noticed how I could hear the gentle tinkle of those wind chimes on the porch that had been drowned out by the previously humming house. I took a few deep breaths, and I just noticed how the energy in the room had shifted. And I felt this really wonderful sense of release, of tension. And just for a brief moment, I think I experienced a little sacred stillness. And that's another way of thinking about silence, as relief. Noise creates tension. We talked about that also in Talk Back. Dick brought up one of my favorite sort of tension release moments in life. If you've been on a sailboat that's been motoring out of the harbor, and then you get out there and you're far enough and there's enough wind and you put up the sails and you cut the motor. Oh, that's just like the best release in the world. If you haven't experienced that, then I hope you get to. Because there, you don't realize how much tension there is with that motor, because you just sort of get used to it. And then when it goes away, it's just, that is bliss to me. And, you know, we're so surrounded by these different ambient noises that we often don't realize how much tension we are carrying with us. And then I consider the noise that's not audible. I think of not only our inner chatter, but of our attachments, the expectations and ideas and people and beliefs that we desperately hold on to, even when they don't serve us anymore. Those are all a form of noise that keep us in a state of tension, and they keep us from being fully present to ourselves and to one another. That's why we should make it a priority to cultivate an intentional relationship with silence as part of our emotional, mental, and spiritual health. By being still and slowing down, appreciating silence, sitting with our muddy, messy thoughts long enough to let them settle and the water to clear, this is the way that we start to create a good life, which I know is something that this community is all about. It's how we expand our hearts and we make room for truth. And I do have a, but wait, there's more aspect to this, because increasing our relationship with silence doesn't just benefit us, it benefits those that we are with. If we can make friends with silence for ourselves, we have an easier time holding silence for others. And that, if you've experienced that, that's a huge gift that we give someone else. A loving silence, that's a powerful way to be witness to someone else's journey, especially if that other person is suffering. I want to take just a moment as I wrap up here to hold up a mirror to this community and reflect to you how you use loving silence to be a witness. To put this in context, first consider this book, or this verse from the book Psalms for Prayer, which offers contemporary and affirming interpretations of the Psalms. And this is from Psalm 24. Keep your heart open and free. Make time to dwell in silence. Become a peaceful presence in the world. And I'm looking over at Chris, because what it occurs to me is that our community, and with under Chris's leadership, embodies this invitation every Saturday during Stand for Peace. I've only been able to attend a few times, but what I've seen is exactly this: open and free hearts, dwelling in loving and intentional silence, bearing witness and inviting others to embrace the beautiful diversity of humankind, and being a peaceful presence in the world. And that is really super cool. So I've taken us through a few ways of looking at silence as a both and, both the presence of sound and more than that. It's stillness, it's patience, it's truth revealer, it's release, it's witness, and it's presence. So I'm going to close the way that I started and hope that as I read this verse again, you might hear it just a little bit differently and that you now feel you have different ways to enter into a relationship with silence that feeds your spirit. And again, this is from the Tao Te Ching. Do you have the patience to wait till your mud settles and the water is clear? Can you remain unmoving till the right action arises by itself? The master doesn't seek fulfillment. Not seeking, not expecting, she is present and can welcome all things.